Parak Yudzayin. Vayiish meharafayim ushmo michyahu.
So this is after Shimshon.
Shimshon is gone. The question is when exactly this is, okay? The following three events are all interrelated. There's going to be a lot. There's number one, it's going to be the what's called the making of an idol that was created by Micha. Second was Dun conquering the city of Laish, which we're not so sure whether it was Jewish or not, which we'll talk about. And the third was the civil war between Binyamin and the other tribes. They were all interrelated, okay? There was hatred, there was suffering, everything. Pilash Begiva. We're going to talk about all the idolatry together. Yeah.
Rashi doesn't address the Dun situation.
Well, it's part of this. It's part of Micha, because they're on their way to get Micha. That's part of what's going on over here. But either way, this man's name was Michayhu. You see what his name is, okay? Now look at Bayes very quickly, okay? Before we get into this whole idea. And Bayes says, Vayomer le'imo, and he said to his mother, Elefo mea ketzef asher lukach bach, you know, there was 1,100 silver pieces that were taken from you. Va'at alis, okay, you cursed. V'gama martzba oznai, hinea ketzef an ishi ani. So you said into my ears, right, that, oh my gosh, somebody stole all my money. So behold, I have the silver. I took it. And his mother said, okay, although I cursed you before, may my son be blessed by God. Okay? So now, look at the next pasuk. It says in Gimel, Vayoshev is Elefo mea kesef le'imo. He returned the 1,100 silver pieces to his mother. Vayomer imo, hikdash hikdashti es hakesef l'Hashem yadi livni. I already was makdishit all the silver to Hashem from my hands to my son to make a pesel u'masecha v'atashi ben uloch. Right? I wanted to make it into a some type of a graven and molded idol. So I promised Hashem that I would make it into an idol. So I can't go against that. And now I return it back to you. Okay, said the mother of Michal together. By Yashua's Kesef Limo, he returned the money to his mother. By Tinyelimo, and his mother took Masayim Kesef, 200 silver pieces. By Tinyelotar, she gave it to the refiner. She made it into a Pesel Masecha, and it was in the house of Michayhu. Notice his name is still Michayhu. Then it says, By Ish Micha, Lo Beis Elohim. The man Micha made for himself an idol worship house. He made an apron and types of oracles, and he, you know, consecrated the hand of one of his children, and he became for him as a Kohen. Somebody became in charge, and that became the person in charge for him. This brings us up through Pasuk Hey over here. And in Vav, it says, in those days there was no king among Bnei Yisrael. Every man did whatever he wanted without any problems whatsoever. Now we've got a lot over here, a lot of what's going on over here. Now number one, if we want to look up where everybody was from, okay, there is a map over here that says where everybody was from. Asniel ben Kenaz, Shimshon, Ivtson was in Beis Lechem, Eud ben Geir was somewhere around Ephraim, Avdon ben Hillel was in Piraton, which is in between Ephraim and Menashe, Tola ben Pul was right around there in Menashe, maybe part of Yisachar. Gidon, son of Yoash, was right around here in Ophrah. Yair Agiladi, Yivdach Agiladi, Barak ben Abinoam, Shamgar ben Anas, right, by Asher ben Atali. Those are the people that we know about that are around here, okay? Now, there are lots of questions when exactly this whole story of Micha happened. Did this happen right after Shimshon? Now, the simple shot is it happened right after Shimshon. It's written after Shimshon. Maybe it happened during there. No, but it seems to, because although there is no order, Ein Muktam Ucher B'Toda, it seems that there's Muktam Ucher B'Nach. I mean, throughout all of Malachim, it seems to be going by a certain order in which we're going through one king and then going by the same king at the same time. Divrei Hayamim is clearly an order. By much of Nach, there is a clear order. This could be an exception, and Ein Muktam Ucher B'Toda may apply over here as well. That's a possibility. But it seems clear. But, however, there are other things over here. Number one, we're going to see that Dun is going to be looking for a portion. How is he looking for a portion 300 years later? He's Dun. D-O-N-E, I didn't mean to say that, but that's that. It's strange that all of a sudden Laish is conquered. Where were they living up until now? So it seems that this is not referring to, also, we refer to Yerushalayim later on as a Goyish city. We're going to see that it's owned by the Yebusim. Yerushalayim has been owned by Jews for the last 300 years. The Yebusim were kicked out years earlier. So it's strange that we would call it that as well, right? We talked about that in the first Perek of Shoftim. So why would we call it that? So a lot of people put this in between Yoshua and Asniel ben Kenaz. and it's all the way over there. And that makes sense. Ein melech bi Yisrael, there's no king, means there wasn't even a shofet yet. Yoshua was in charge. He left it to the Zakenim. The Zakenim were lazy for a little bit, and eventually Othniel ben Kenaz came up, and he started becoming a leader. Great men were alive. Othniel ben Kenaz was alive. Pinchas was alive. Kalev was alive. There was a Zakenim that were around. Yair ben Menashe may have still been alive, right, depending on that metric. There were people that were unbelievably great that were still alive that were there, but nobody became a leader. Nobody was a leader, and a leader means they get up and they make decisions, and they make the unpopular decisions. They decide to go ahead and do something, and they do it. That's difficult to get. Not everybody was like that.
Was a learner. He wasn't a leader.
But he became a leader. He led them in war, and granted, he had all the Yoshev Yavits, the people that he taught and whatever it was, but he became a leader, and that's what I meant by the shofet. He was a clear shofet that led the people, not just allowed the people to do. He was a clear leader. And that's why this happened before Othniel ben Kenaz, and that's what happened. So there was nobody to protest idolatry after such an area. Now, others say that it was after Shimshon, and the numbers are rounded off a little bit and whatever, stuff like that. It's possible this happened when Shimshon was imprisoned by the Plishtim. Now, we see the Psukim, it seemed that Shimshon was captured by the Plishtim and remained by them for, I don't know, a couple days. That's what it seems like. He was only in prison for a couple days. It could be he was in prison for a couple years. And during that time, there was no one in charge. There was no leader. He was powerless at the time, and that's that. Who knows? Who knows what's going to be? It's very, very strange. Okay, very, very strange what exactly it is. But
it's interesting. Even if this is going on in Ephraim, like, Kalev was there, or which was there.
There's no question.
Ephraim was like the hotbed of the big guys where they all settled.
It's Yoshua very strange.
Settled in Ephraim.
It's very, very strange because it's right near the middle of Eretz Yisrael, right above Yerushalayim, right near the middle of Eretz Yisrael. It's a very, very strange period. But the only question is, why put it here? No matter what, why would it be put here? If it's not right after Shimshon, why put it here? The answer is simple, though. You can't put it in the beginning of the Sefer. Right, even if it happened right after Yeshua died.
Yeah, you don't
want to. Starting off with Pesel Micha and Pilegesh Megiva is really off. So you didn't want to put it over there. There's no appropriate place to put it over there. Anywhere else would have been an interruption of the text. We went through Shofet, 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 and we're skipping until Eli, and Eli doesn't come up until Shmuel Aleph. So we're not getting into, after Shimshon, there's Eli HaKohen and Shmuel HaNavi, which are the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. There's no other place to put them. Where are you going to put them? You're going to put them in between Yair HaGilavi? Why would you put it over there? So I'm going to put it in the beginning of the Sefer, the end of the Sefer. We didn't want to start off at the beginning of the Sefer. We wanted to put it in the very, very end. A shameful episode like this would be a terrible thing to start off
that
with.
Could be a riot to it not having actually occurred after Shimshon.
Right. There would be, I don't know if it's a riot. It's not a proof. It's just, why would it be put here if it didn't happen after Shimshon? The answer is that there's no else to put it. You're not going to put it in the beginning. So it's not a riot. It's just an answer, and a pretty good answer at that, as to why it's going to be over there. Also, it seems that this is all a criticism of the Shoftim. Even if you say it's at the end or maybe in the beginning, this problem persisted throughout. Pesel Micha existed all the way up until the end of Shimshon. Every Shofet is blamed a little bit and criticized for not trying to get rid of what Micha had made. Now that's a bit of a problem over there. Alright, Micha originally was a tzaddik. He was unbelievable tzaddik. That's why he's known as Michayhu at first, and then he switches his name to Micha. He loses the Yud Hey Vav of Hashem's name. Yeah. He gradually became corrupted. Right? That's the most sense. Micha means who is God. Michayhu is who is like God. Who is Mika Yud Hey Vav? Who is like Yud Hey Vav? Here it's Miko. I'm Lizzy. What difference does it make? And that's the difference that it all went. Now, when it got stolen over here, some say that the silver was stolen by someone else and Micha recovered it. And Micha just said, I have it. I took it from the thief. Others say that he took it from her, but he only meant to guard it. He never meant to steal it. That's a second shot, right? That he never meant to guard it. He only meant to steal it. And he wanted to tell her what she had done, but immediately, as soon as she saw it, she was like, oh my gosh, I cursed the person who went there up and took it. And he's like, oh no, what am I supposed to do? Eventually, he admitted to it, and that's that. Third thing is that he really did steal the silver. He coveted it. He wanted it immediately. He didn't want to inherit it. The curse made him frightened, and he confessed. And that's that. But that means that he's not a tzaddik, right? So those are the three different pshatim that we have over here. Lokach loch is a weird word. It was taken from you, should be. Nimcha. Not taken for you, but taken from you. It's the wording in the Pasuk and Pasuk Beis where it says, Asher lukach loch, that were taken for you, is a weird wording. Why does it say that way? Some say that lokach, that the idea of lat, licha, can also mean the word from you. But that's weird. We've never seen that anywhere before. But that has to do with grammar and stuff like that.
Rashi says it's the lashon
the word
stealing.
Right.
And it was stolen from you.
So the word lecha can also be the silver that was yours. In other words, you read it as hakesef lach, the kesef that belonged to you, asher lukach, that was taken. And that's how you got to read it as, and that's like that. The mother, on the other hand, as soon as she found out that it was Micha that had taken it, she said that the curse was never intended for somebody like him. So even if you did steal it, don't worry about it, right? Or the curse was only if the thief did not return the silver. And that's why the curse didn't happen over here. Here, obviously, he returned the silver. Okay, we definitely see that he did tshuva over here by returning the silver whatsoever. It is strange. She had already dedicated the silver, but he refused to take part of it. Do you notice? He said, I give it to you in order to make a pestle masecha. That's all she benulach. That's what he said to her, right? I'm going to give it to you right now. But he didn't. He took it and gave it back to his mother, and his mother made the idol out of it. And that's what ended up happening over here. Now, Micha's mother still believed in God. Don't think for a second that he didn't believe in God. She believed in God 100%. But back then, people were very, very used to having influences and oracles and having certain ways. And they felt that they could speak to God by some type of divine influence, similar to the golden calf, similar to the Egel Azov. And that's what they expected over here. The mouthpiece, the oracle, was through this idol, but they really did believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu itself. That's the idea behind it, and that's the problem that people didn't totally understand. Pesel means to carve, Masecha means to mold, but it's going to be one big thing altogether. She only gave 200 silver pieces to make the idol. Did you notice that? It was 1,100 silver pieces, but then it only became 200. So what happened to the other one? So number one, she went back in her word. That she decided, she's like, yeah, I was going to give it all to a Pesel Masecha. She's like, whoa, 1,100 silver pieces for a god? That's crazy. I'm not going to do that. So she gave less than a fifth over to the god. Okay, that's number one. That's number two. The 200 pieces were for the idol. The 900 pieces were for the accessories. You need accessories, you know what I'm saying? Like, you buy an American Girl doll. The American Girl doll is $100, but all the accessories and everything else.
An apron costs money.
Yeah, and, you know.
Rashi says something that the woman could possibly be Delilah.
No, is it? What does it say that? I don't remember that. Oh, no, Tosubiyadam. It's a mistake. Sharbisham called Michal Shimshon, because Michal was way before Shimshon. Okay, if this happened after Shimshon, then maybe, yeah. Right, but if it happened way before Shimshon, clearly it wasn't Delilah. That's an interesting call altogether. That's interesting, because remember, she had 1,100 silver pieces. That's the connection. Right, 1,100 silver pieces were given to Lila for what she had done to Shimshon. Great call, very, very good call. Otherwise, the idol was 900. The 200 came out of her pocket to pay the silver guy, you know, the refiner and stuff like that. Either way, those are Trufim. Okay, those are bad. It became worse and worse as time went on. He made a house for it. Then eventually he dedicated one of his sons for it. I mean, it's pretty bad altogether. They still sometimes they would use Bechors for priests. That's what they would do back then. So there was no king in all of Bnei Yisrael over here. Who wrote the Sefer Shoftim?
Wasn't Shmuel?
It was Shmuel. It would make sense that Shmuel, who at his time, that's when the people asked for a king, he wrote about the goodness of what a king was. Now, you could say it's almost like,
is this sarcastic, like the first reference that says, Ein Melech B'Yisrael?
The first time we've seen something like this. Yeah, Ein Melech B'Yisrael. It could be that people were looking back with nostalgia. Did you remember back in the day? And Shmuel's like, no, you don't want what's back in the day. You see what ended up happening in that way. I still remember, I can't listen to tapes very often. I don't like listening to Torah tapes. My mind is not into it when I'm driving and I'm spacing out usually most of the time, and then I miss most part of the shir, and then I'm just like, oh my gosh, I don't know, whatever. So I was once listening to Rav Victor Miller. Rav Victor Miller was talking about how if there was no, it is really, right, it's a regular Gemara, right? If there was no Shilton, if there was no Melech, right? And Ish Ayesha Ben Avyasa, people would do whatever they wanted and they wouldn't care. Like, he walked by, he said, like, I walked by a really nice store, had a very nice, you know, I don't know what it was, CD player or something like that. I would just punch the window and take it and run. If I wasn't afraid of the police, that's what I would do. If I wasn't afraid of the government, if I wasn't afraid of laws, that's what I would do. You need laws, you need a king, you need somebody to be in charge. All right. There was a child who came from Beis Lechem Yehuda, from the family of Yehuda, but he was a Levi. And he lived there. Now, clearly, that meant that his mother was from Yehuda, but his father was a Levi. Okay? Because he was a Levi, that meant his father. But his mothership was right over there, okay? So, he's... That's possible. It's possible as well. Either way, regardless, Elkanah was called an Ephraimite, even though he was a Levi. Right? Yair ben Menashe was not a son of Menashe. Yair ben Menashe really belonged to another Shevet altogether. The man left from Beis Lechem Yehuda to live wherever he could live. In other words, he was very poor, couldn't find any work, and he needed a place to go. He came to Har Ephraim, to the house of Micha, to do his way. Now, he was old enough that he was considered a man, but he acted like a little boy. So Vayelech Ish, right? And that's that he went as a man, but over here we call him a nar, right? He acted like a little nar. He didn't want to settle in one place. He wanted to go on and on, and whatever it was, he was persuaded very easily, as we're going to see. A very fickle person. We'll talk about that. Micha was a tzaddik in a way. He was always into hachnasas orchim. He had over anybody you can imagine. He brought them over to his house and he had them live by him. And that was Micha. Micha was a tremendous machnes oreach. That's what in pasuk test. Where are you coming from? I'm going to live wherever I want to live. Live with me. You could be a father for me. And a kohen. I will give you 10 silver pieces per day. And a new set of clothing. And food. And the Levi went. Meaning he's like, yeah, I'm not going to stay. He saw that Micha was into Avodah Zarah, and he's like, I don't want to stay for Avodah Zarah. We're going to see later on, this is a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu.
That's right.
Yonah said, and Gershom ben Menashe. We'll see later on, Menashe is really going to be Moshe Rabbeinu. We're going to see that that's who it was. He couldn't be corrupted. He couldn't do it. And it's amazing that Micha's like, where did Micha come from? Micha was a brick in the wall. He was a crushed child who was placed in the wall in Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you putting these children? Why are you killing these children? This way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, I'm getting rid of the thorns that you won't need. Okay, so I'm getting rid of the thorns. You're not going to want this kid. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't understand. You know, maybe the kid could be a great kid. And Hashem said, try it. Go see. He pulled a brick out of the wall, and that kid was Micha. Micha comes from the word Nisma'ach. He was crushed in the wall and saved. And that was who Micha was. Micha led astray Moshe's own grandson. You see that obviously you don't go up against the Kodesh Baruch Hu's word at any point. He went away.
You're not saying that Micha survived since Mitzrayim.
Well, if it's right after Yoshua, then for sure, yeah. He's only, what, 50, 60 years old. Yeah. If Moshe Rabbeinu pulled him out as a brick, that means he was 1 year old when Moshe Rabbeinu came back, and that's at the age of 80. 1 year old then. Okay? 40 years in the desert, he's 40. Right? If this happened 15, 25 years, let's say, after Yeshua died, 75 years old. That's definitely possible. Okay, either way, regardless, it says, Yoel HaLevi Loshev Zeish, and then the Levi agreed to live with the man. He came back, he's like, you know, I got nowhere else to go. But now, Loke Echam Yibarav, the child became like one of his children, one of his sons. Yamale Micha's Yad Levi. So Micha appointed the Levi, Yilo Anar LeKoin, and became a Kohen. But you base Micha, he stayed in the base Micha, Yomer Micha, I'll tell you that, Kiyetiv Hashem Li. Now I know that God has done good to me, because now I have a Levi as a Kohen. You'd think that that's like a clear sign that you shouldn't be doing this. It's only a Levi, it's not a Kohen, but he was fooled completely by himself. Unbelievable. What kind of a bad influence. It was a divine test for both of them, and they both failed, and that's that. All right, well, I'm shoddy from here on when it comes to my preparation. Here we go. They wanted a place to live until that day. No place had been allotted for them within the Nachla. If you look in most maps, you will not find Shevet Dan. You'll find them in weird places. Either you'll find them all the way up, or you'll find them all the way down. You're going to find them in very, very strange places, but you can't find Shevet Dan most of the time. The reason why is because they moved around a little bit. Sometimes they were on top, sometimes they were on the bottom. And we'll see that was the last person to be able to receive a portion, and that's that. Dan is considered the most inferior of all the tribes. They're always known as the Ma'asef, the one who gathers. Even though they're the leader of the last group, Dan, Asher, and Naphtali really was the last one. Dan is known as like the inferior group. Ahaliyah, Ben Achisamach, Lamate, Dan. Betzalel was Yehuda, the top of the Shvatim, and Aliyav was from the bottom of the Shvatim, Shevet Dan. That's what he was considered. There was lots of stuff behind and why Dan was like that. But Nunu, they were still worthy of having judges. Obviously, Dan will, Dan Yadinamo, there's something going to be something great behind him. We all know what happened with Shimshon. There is something there. But that was that. They were the last to conquer the portion that was assigned to them. That was that. That they were searching for a portion over here. Some say that they did conquer it, and then they lost it again right afterward because the Amorim drove them out. There's some behind that as well. Either way, okay, that's that. They sent out from their families five men, okay, some of them among their leaders, people of war, Tzara and Ashtaol, remember those cities from Shimshon, right? L'ragel is ours in order to spy out the land, L'chokran to investigate, V'yomer Elayim, L'chukhiku is ours, go investigate the land, V'yavohar Ephraim on Beis Micha V'yilinu Shom. So they went to Beis Micha. Everybody knew about Beis Micha. Again, Haknas's Orchim was Micha's thing, right? And they lived there in and of it. They lived there in that area. Okay, so that's that all together. There's a lot of questions about Dun's children. Dun's child's name was Hushim, then Dun. He's in other places in Pilchas, he's known as Shucham. Right? Others say that Hushim, it says Ubnei Dan Hushim. It sounds like there were many children, and one of them's name was Hushim, or Hushim is a reference to all of his children, that he had many, many children. Either way, we don't know exactly how many children he had, whatever, it's something like that, but we do know that Dan had one of the biggest shvatim at the end. Yehuda had the most, but they had like 62,700, if I remember correctly, at the very, very end of the day, which was the third to most altogether. Yehuda was number one, Yosef was number two, because they had Ephraim and Manasseh, and number three was Dan. So Dan is a huge nation altogether, and where they were supposed to go. Now, they went to spy out the land. They wanted to see what was going to be there. Now, if you look, Camp of Dan may have been all the way down here, right around Beit Shemesh, right around the area of Yehuda and Shimon and whatever it is. They're going to go all the way up to Laish, which is all the way up there. They went through this area of Ephraim, crossed over the Jordan River, and went to right over there to where, you know, Lebanon basically be nowadays.
We credit Hushim with killing Asa too, right?
Yeah, Hushim and Dan is the one that killed. Yeah, and that's the reason why Hushim's letters are equal to Mashiach. Mashiach will destroy Esau at the end of days. That's what it's supposed to be. Hema'im Beis Micha, they were staying by the house of Micha, but Hema'i Kiris calling our lady. They recognized the voice of that child, the lady, because it's Moshe's kid, you know, it's Moshe's grandkid. They turned to the church. Who brought you here? What are you doing here? What is going on here? They're shocked. I mean, Moshe, what in the world is going on over here? They some say that they knew, you know, the idol itself, and they realized what was going on here. But this guy was a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. He gave many arguments, and he argued back and forth and back and forth, and eventually he was so, and they said he's a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, well, how is it that you're, and he told them, like, look, there's another way of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is it. And that's the idea behind it, and they were convinced by this, right over there. Here, Zeh is always a reference to something that's around you or something that's there. The Zeh over here is the oracles. What is going on here? What do you have in your hands? And what is this exactly that you're dealing with? And that's what he was asking him. What do you have over here? Vayomer, kazov kazeh, also li micha, like this and that. This is what micha did for me. Vayisgareini, vayeli l'kohen. He hired me, and I became his priest.
The concept of the oracle wasn't foreign to us. We had the choshen.
No, it was 100%. It was a different type of an aphode, but yeah, it's the exact same type of thing working in the exact same way. Just not a Kohen Gadol, not a Shiloh, right? And working opposite. The aphode back then, for them, was in the back instead of in the front. He said that I am following the teaching of my father, Moshe, and that's what Zeh v'Zeh, you know, Mizeh u'Mizeh hink suvim, that the luchos are written on both sides. Moshe Rabbeinu had said that a person should rely upon, would rather serve idolatry than take tzedakah from the community. So I had no money. I had nowhere to go. So I assumed that that's what my father meant. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say that. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say you should serve Avodah Zarah rather than take tzedakah. He said, you should do an Avodah Shezara lo. A service that you don't normally do, a work that you wouldn't normally do that's strange to you, do that rather than take tzedakah. but he misunderstood. His own grandson misunderstood. And he thought, right, that that's what it was referring to. And unfortunately, he was too hasty in his studies. It sounded strange to him, but he didn't question it. And his laziness as a student now led him to be the person that he is today. So please ask God and find out, are we going to be matzliach on our ways that we are going upon? Are we going to do anything or not? Right? So they were not going to oppose anything. I mean, it's a grandson of Moshe being over here. Well, we're not going to go up against it. They were impressed by him, and they thought that maybe there was some truth behind it, right? Yeah. That's what they were about. What's
Rashi saying here?
Yeshkan Tamios Harbe. Aren't you from the children of Moshe Rabbeinu? Shemar Bo Altikav Alom. Don't come near this place. Nisam Taladam Amazda Biyakla. All those are references to Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to God. And now you're serving a Avodah Zarah? How could you do that? He said to them, go in peace. Okay? The opposite God is your way that you will go upon, and everything's good. Everything's good for you, and you don't have to worry about anything whatsoever. Now, in the beginning, they looked at the Nar. They saw him as a little boy, right? They didn't see him as anything else. But now, by Yom HaKohen, all of a sudden they start seeing him as more and more important, right? They start to realize that his attitude, their whole attitude toward him had changed, and they believed what he was trying to say to them. They realized that there was something behind it, or they thought there was something behind it, and they listened. The five men went, they went to Laish. They saw that the people living there were living securely, like the ways of the Tzidonim, quiet and secure. There was nothing wrong with the land, right? They didn't destroy anything in the land. Yorish Etzer Rechokim, there was nobody there that was Yorish Etzer, that was strong people. Rechokim Mitzidonim, they were far away from the other Tzidonim. Dover Ein Lam Yimadam, they had no problems with other people, so looking in both ways. They saw it and they said, well, look, if we fight them, nobody's going to find out about it for a long, long time. Because Tzidonim live far away, they're not going to hear about it whatsoever. But the other thing is that they're pretty much secure. And they didn't have to worry about anything, which means that they were peaceful people. They might have been able to somehow bargain with them. Can we live amongst you? Can we live with you? Rather than just kick them out and destroy them and kill all of them whatsoever. It could be, again, that they had to and they were chayav to, but it seems that Laish is outside of Eretz Canaan, which means that they didn't have to kill these people and they didn't have to destroy them. That's the idea behind it. It's a very, very strange thing altogether. It does say that they were Yoshat or Machlam Dover. The idea is no one in Laish ever embarrassed anyone else. There were no fights or arguments with anybody else. They lived at peace with each other, and everybody was okay. Nobody was embarrassed by having to turn his friend away empty-handed. They had everything they needed. Whenever they asked another for help, he had the means to give it, and they enjoyed great prosperity, which is good things for the city of Laish. That's the idea behind it. They came back to their brothers who were in Sorah Neshtol all the way down. Said to them, their brothers, Matem, what's with you? Let's get up and go against them. Kiwino is ours. We need to mode. We saw the land. It's awesome. That's a machshim. I'll tell you. You guys are silent. Don't be lazy. Lo lechaz lebolder saaretz, to go and to inherit the land. Kibolachan tavolo amboteach. When you go there, you're going to see that it's a land, it's a people living in security. The Aretz Rechav Yadayim, it's a very wide land. God has put it into your hands. Makom Asher In Sham Machzor Kol Davar Shav Aretz. It's a place where you're not lacking anything for anything that you need over here. You don't need to send other spies. You don't have to go there anymore. We can attack it by surprise, and we're not going to see any resistance. They have no weapons whatsoever. They won't even have. If we wait, you never know what's going to be over there. But that's that. And we saw that there was anything that can be grown in any other place, we'll be able to grow there. So we don't have any problems whatsoever. And stuff like that. Okay, so that's that. Here we go. Vayisu misham mishpachas adoni mitorom yeshol shesh mil yesh. They sent 600 people from Tzar and Eshtol from mishpachas adon. Chagur klaim al kama. All 600 were wearing their weapons of war. Vayalav yachanu bekiras yarm vihuda. They stayed by Neve. Al king karu lamakom ahu machmen adon yom azeh. Hine achrei kiras yarm. They have a certain area right around there which is now called machmen adon, west of kiras yarm. Okay, so also called Bala. They camped outside it. They got supplies there. They prepared for their campaign. I don't think that people usually allowed warriors to stay inside the city unless they were from that city. So they usually kept kept them outside. So they called it Machnetan. There was another city right around there that they called it that. Okay, here we go. Vayavru Misham Harafayim. They turned from there to Harafayim. They bought Beis Micha. Again, they came to Beis Micha as well. Again, Beis Micha was the place to go. So obviously the five people went in to, you know, thank him for the bracha that the lady had given them because he was right. Right? And tell him about the success. So it says over here, the five men that went to spy out the land, they came to Laish. And they said to the brothers, do you know that in these houses there are some holy stuff inside here, right? There's an eifo, truff, and pestle, and masecha. And now you know what you have to do. They already started feeling that there was real power there. They felt that they needed it, right? They needed it for their campaign against their, you know, against the army that they were going to go against. So they plotted carefully. They wanted to be able to get this without Micha knowing about it. Micha had a lot of people. He was a very rich man. They threw Shammai of Ovo Beth Anara Levi. They came to the house of Anara Levi, Beth Micha. They asked him how he was doing. 600 men wearing their weaponry was standing outside the gate. They came there. The Kohen stood right at the doorway of the gate and he saw that 600 people wearing weaponry. As these five men came in and took the stuff, he went out yelling at them. He said, what are you guys doing? What are you taking that stuff for? And as they left, he saw that there were 600 men standing outside with weaponry. And he's like, oh, got it. And that was that. The Ila Bo Beis Micha. They came to the house of Micha. What's going on here? Be silent. Put your hand in your mouth. And come with us. Is it better for you to be the Kohen in a house of one? Or is it a Kohen l'shevet? Maybe you should be a Kohen for an entire Shevet and for a whole family of an Yisrael. Right? He couldn't believe what they were doing over here. But they told him, like, this is your chance for greatness. You could be in charge of an entire Shevet. And this could be all yours. Again, he had a conscience. But he was fickle. He was like, yeah, good times. He was tempted immediately, right? So they told him like this. Put your hand on your mouth and pretend that you would like to scream. And it'll look like we forced you to come with us instead of you ditching Micha. So he did it. Okay, and that's the idea behind it. That's the idea behind it. Right? So the Kohen was liked it, he understood it, took the able to drop from the pastor willingly, and he went amongst us. So at first, it was taken from him. Then he went on his own, right? He realized it was going to be that way. So it could be, right, the Dunham surrounded him so they wouldn't be able to return to Micha, and that's what I mean, in the midst of the people of Karavah, they wouldn't let him be on the edges, because you're on the edges, he could run. Here they put him in the middle. Then they turned, they went, they put all the children and the cattle and anything that was heavy, they put them in front of them. And the reason why is because it seems, right, if those people would have been behind, then when Micha came, Micha would be met up with the cattle and the children and everything like that. They would take them as hostages until they got the silverbacks. Instead, they put them in front, said they wouldn't be able to be there. So that was the formation that would be the least vulnerable. Hey, Merachikum, Beis Micha. They had gone some distance from the house of Micha. Then the men who were living by Micha, they started screaming, Alavia, Biko is B'nai Dan. They started running after the B'nai Dan. The Yiko is B'nai Dan. They called out to the B'nai Dan. And they turn their face. What are you doing? What are you chasing after? So what are you screaming at us for? You've taken my God. That's a coin. And you also took my coin. And then he went to Mali Odomazat Tomroilai Malach. What else do I need to say? What you're saying to me, what's the matter with you? How could you do that? I mean, you guys took everything that I had over here, right? I understand, it said Micha, that you want a wonderful God to be able to help you. I can't blame you for it, but it means so much more to me. I'm the one who cared for it. I'm the one who took it, and that whatever it is, don't you realize what this is, right? Now you haven't left me with anything whatsoever. Some say that Micha's idol possessed special powers because it was made at a moment that the heavenly bodies were in a particular position. Such a cosmic event would not occur again for a long time. So it would not be possible for Micha to replace the idol. That's why he said, I have lost everything. I'll never be able to make something like this ever again. There's nothing I can do. Do not let your voice be heard among us, because there are embittered souls here who might strike you. And everybody here will die. They went on their way. Micha saw that they were stronger than him. There was no police to go to. There was no king. There was no shogun. Even if there was, what are you going to do? My idol was stolen. Right? I mean, it's just there's nothing that you can do. That's that. They threatened to kill him and stuff like that. That is that. The Himalach was the Shah of Micha. They took what Micha had made as a Kohen. Ashrahayelo and his Kohen. And they came to Elijah. I'm shokated with to a people that was quiet and tranquil. They killed them by the servant. The ears of relation. They burned the city by fire. The Amos of Kirachoki and Tzidon. Nobody was able to save them because it was far away from Tzidon. They had nothing to do with other people. Right? It was in the valley by Beis Rehova. Even it was a Yerei Yeshuba. And they built up the city and lived in it. So that's the idea. Again, it was a cowardly act that they went up against them without trying to go. Whatever it was, this was not. These guys were mighty warriors going up against people that were not ready for war. They should have called out in peace. They should have asked them. They should have gone. Whatever it is, but that's that. That's that. They burnt all the idols because they absolutely rejected idolatry. Micha's idol was the only one they kept because they thought it would still belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's that. Vayikusham Ha'ir Dan, Shema Ha'ir Dan. They called the name of the city Dan, B'shem Dan Aviyam, in the name of Dan, their father, Shulul Yisrael. V'ulam Laish, Shema Ha'ir Lishona. However, Laish was the original name, and that is that. It's funny. Leshem is also a name that's used for Laish. That's the name that was used in Yoshua when it says, Leshem is the name of a precious stone called Jacinth, J-A-C-I-N-T-H, and that was the stone of Dun on the breastplate. So why that specifically? Laish is also called a lion cub. That's one of the reasons. Either way, regardless, the idol eventually replaced the Mishkan as usual, and they worshipped it. Vekim Elam Ben Dun as apostle, they set up the Passover. Yehonasan Ben Gershom Ben Menasha, you see the little nun? See the little nun? Oh, it doesn't even have it in there.
No.
The nun should be hanging. They were Kohanim for Shevet Dan until they were exiled. They had Pesul Micha as long as there was something in Shiloh. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Okay, either way, regardless, we do know that there's another thing that Micha was there for. Micha was there when he saw the coffin of Yosef rise up from the deeps of the Nile River. Right? And how Moshe Rabbeinu was able to rise that up is by throwing a golden patak, a golden sheet that said Ale Shur on it, and he threw it in. Micha picked up that piece of gold and threw it by the Egel Azov and created, formed the Egel Azov from that piece of gold. It's possible that piece of gold from the Egel Azov was saved even after the Egel Azov and brought to Micha, and he made a pencil out of it even later on. We don't know what it ended up being, but that's a crazy little thing. Why was there such extraordinary mercy and permission for God to allow them to continue to have the idol for so long after clearly it was something wrong? So when Micha began to worship the idols, angels went to God and asked permission to destroy him. God looked at Micha and saw his exceptional hospitality, said to the angels, leave him alone. He's truly a disciple of Abraham. All who pass by are welcome at his table, as we saw. Didn't Abraham teach that kindness and hospitality to strangers and wanderers is as great as honoring my Shechina? How then can I permit Micha to be destroyed? Micha's good deeds protect him in many ways. He's saved from destruction both in this world and the next. He's also saved from sinking any deeper into sin. God saw that he could not resist worshipping the idol, so he arranged that it was taken away from him. Micha might have been bitterly upset when the Dunim stole the idol from him, but it was a blessing in disguise. It allowed him to eventually find worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and go to the Mishkan again, Mishkan Shiloh, because he couldn't afford to make another idol, and he couldn't make another idol from it, and he went back to God. So Micha eventually became a tremendous tzaddik. That doesn't mean that as long as you do Achnasas Orchim, you can do whatever the heck you want. Micha was different in that way, and he still took responsibility for the sins. It's known as Pesul Micha.
Right.
It's not known as Pesul Dun. It's not known as anything else. It's Pesul Micha. If anything, it should be Pesul Yehonasan. He's the evil guy around here. Pesul Micha. To have you be known as such an evil person is pretty, pretty bad, especially when he's such a massive tzaddik. That's the idea behind it. that's that. There's a lot behind Menashe. We know that Moshe had three parts of his neshama. There was Moshe, Shase, and Hevel. There was another neshama that was part of Moshe, but it was Noach. Noach didn't daven for the children of the Mavels, and now he had to daven for Klal Yisrael, and that's why he davened for Klal Yisrael over and over and over again. There's a lot behind Moshe and Noach, but regardless, Menashe is a Moshe, Noach, Shase, Hevel. And those are the people that were together all together. Menashe. Okay, he compares to Menashe, the Menashe of later on. That's another reason why he's called Menashe, because it's comparable to Menashe itself. Yep. Here we go. When did he live? Some say that when Shmuel destroyed the idols, Dunham hid Micha's idol and saved it. When Yerubim established the worship of the golden calf, they set up Micha's idol along with it. Right? But you understand? Yonatan might have done tshuva in the days of David HaMelech, if Yonatan was still alive. Some say that Shlomo relieved him of his position and replaced him with someone else when he became king. He returned to Dun, went back to his old ways, whatever it was, he was an evil person. He might have lived for a very, very long time. Might have been a very, very long time. We'll see about Yonatan later on when we get to Malachim.
When it says Ad Yom Golas Arts, Rashi says it's B'mes HaCherev, and Monsieur David said it was Golas Aaron.
The Aaron, yeah. Meaning from the times of Eli, and we'll see that. Obviously, we're going to have to see, because Yonatan could not have lived that long. Let's see Perek Yotzei. And now we're going to say a lot of crazy stuff over here. Okay, this is Pilagish Begiva. By Yomi Mahim, it wasn't those days when Melchim Yisrael, there was no king among the Yisrael, the Yish, Levi, Gor, Yarkseh, Harafraim. There was a man, exactly, a man of Levi, who was living in Yarkseh, in the footholds, the foot side of the Harafraim. Exactly, and he took a woman who's Pilagish, again, from base Lechem Yehuda. Okay, now, concubines are not exactly the easiest things to be able to have. We don't allow ourselves to just have concubines. They're not allowed to anybody unless there's something involved. There's a lot of machlokism about how exactly women can be concubines. In some ways, it's a privilege of the king, but normal people can't have it. Otherwise, you got to have a ksuv and kiddushin. But there are certain cases where you're allowed to have it. And Amala Ivria is a pilegish until a certain point. But there are such ways that you can't normally have a pilegish. So she was unfaithful. Now, how was she unfaithful? There's a Gemara that in Gittin that says that either there was a fly or there was a hair that was in his food, hair from down below. And those two things were in the food, and she had disgusted him by having the fly or having the hair inside his food, and that's what it meant. She was unfaithful to him by the Batizna La Pilakshow. The Gemara says there, Elu Elu Devrelo Kim Chaim. It's possible that both things were inside, and he was disgusted by both of them. It's possible that that's that in and of itself, but the simple shot was simply she was unfaithful. And the unfaithful is she slept around with somebody else. Right? That's the idea behind it. Right? She had committed adultery, but it wasn't real adultery because she wasn't really married to him. Either way, my tale me to all be Sophia. She went back home, and she was there for 4 months altogether. Okay, now the lady clearly had overreacted. He punished her physically by beating her up and everything like that, and that's why she ran away, right? Granted, it's something that's offensive, I guess potentially dangerous, whatever it is, but nonetheless he should not have reacted so harshly or anything like that. And a person cannot do that to people in his family and stuff like that. Okay. Vayakam Isha. Her husband got up, Ravilah Haral, and went after her, but the Dabra Oliva to try to speak to her, La Shiva, right, to bring her back. But Naro Imo, his Naro went with him, with Temet Chamorim and a pair of donkeys, she brought them over to her father's house. She was very happy to see him. Now, lots of questions over here, but the simple shot that I think would be something like this. This man may have been a very great man. We have no idea who this guy was. It could be that he was a great tzaddik, or he was extremely rich. And that's the reason why the father was so happy to see him. Like, oh, thank God you're willing to take my daughter back. Like, otherwise, my connection with you is that you're a very rich man. It's great to have you around, and that's that. It could be that's the pshat behind it. There's a bohosno. So his father-in-law, right, kept him around, the father of the young girl. He stayed with him for 3 days. They ate, they drank, right, and they slept there. It could be over here. ever since she had come back, people have been gossiping about her. They suspected that she had actually committed adultery, which is very embarrassing for him. He was eager to appease his son-in-law to take her back so the rumors would stop. Also, his son-in-law was a lady. He was highly respected. It could be that it was something even more special, whatever it is. Who knows? But it doesn't say exactly what it was. It just said they stayed for a while. Okay? It could also be that since it's Vayalinu, it's also a reference to them having relations, meaning he slept with the Pilegish again, meaning he took her back as a Pilegish, as a concubine, but not a wife. But Yom Ravi, on the fourth day, he got up in the morning of Yakim and Lachas, he got up to go. Yom Ravi, an hour on close, no, we got to eat breakfast. We got to eat breakfast, okay? We got to have some bread. They ate a lot, they ate too, and they drank. Come on, you got to stay here tonight. You got a good drink. He urged him, he wanted to go, right? But he told him, listen, it's late, you don't want to go now, whatever it was, right? At the end of the day, right, this is a much better, you know, he stayed back, and he stayed there, and he postponed it as much as possible, okay? Again, the father-in-law wanted to be well-nourished, to be ready, whatever, see, he really likes me, etc. That's why we got up in the morning, by Yom HaKamish, on the fifth day, Lechus, in order to go. They waited until the day started to get into afternoon, by Yochushnem, they were both eating. The man got up to go, him and his Pilegish and his Nar. Come on, it's late now. It's already in the middle of the day. Right? Limpo, stay here. Be happy. And then you'll go tomorrow, early on your way. And you'll go to your tent. You didn't want to stay there. Yerushalayim, you went opposite a Yevusi city, which is Yerushalayim. Again, this is a reference to, must be earlier when the Yevusim were still living there. He had two loads, you know, full on his donkey over there. Saddle donkeys, I guess, saved Pilacho Emo. His Pilegish was with him. Some say that it was Friday, and that night was already going to be Shabbos. He didn't want to go on that day itself. No, he had provisions with him. He wasn't worried about reaching home. They would go wherever they could possibly go, right? So tomorrow, when the father-in-law said to him, listen, you'll go tomorrow, he really meant on Sunday. That's
it makes
part.
Sense. If you add it up, assuming he traveled on Sunday, the fifth day would be Friday.
The fifth day, that is correct. That would make sense. Him, Yavus, they were near Yavus, by Yom Reid Ma'orad Ma'od, it was very late. So the Nar said to his master, come, let's go to this, you know, Yavusi city, we'll sit there, we'll live there. His master said to him, come on, we can't go to a Gaiusha city. It doesn't belong to Jews. So Avarno Ad Giva, we're going to go all the way to Kiva. Okay, so it's possible, it's funny, because they went away from that city, which was non-Jews and whatever it was, and they figured they would go to the Jewish city, right, which is going to be more law-abiding, better people, but obviously that's not what ended up happening. So let's go close to one of these places. We'll either go to Giva or Rama, depending on how far we can go. They went, and the sun set Eitzel Giva Shal Binyamin right by Giva. But Yasuru Sham Lavo Lalun by Giva. They came to sleep in Giva. Then I have a Yeshua Barakova here, and they sat in the middle of the city. They ain't each house of some of Eitzel Lalun. Nobody would have them over. It's unbelievable. It shows that the people of Giva, right, did not want to have anyone. They didn't want to have any hospitality or feel any responsibility toward anybody. Amazing that that's what ended up happening, right, over here. It's absolutely crazy that they didn't invite them over whatsoever and that nobody wanted them. Either way, let's see. Hine ish zakim ba mimaseihu minasada. One man was coming from his work from the field of Erev close to the evening. Vayish meharafraim hu gar b'giva v'anshei hamakom b'nei mini. And the man was from Harafraim. He lived in Giva. And the people of the place were all Binyaminites, right? Then he was the only person. He was an old man. Everybody passed by without offering to help. Now, this man easily could have found an excuse as to say no, right? He was old. It was late. It was, you know, he was the last one to come by. Everybody else saw that they could have helped and whatever, stuff like that, but he was kind, and that made everybody else look a lot worse. The people who did have a chance didn't have a chance that this is, that's that. But notice what the pasuk says. The man was from Harafraim. He was just living in Gilo. He wasn't a Binyaminite. He was a guy from Ephraim. To tell you that he's a different person altogether, right? He'd only lived there for a little bit. He wasn't as wicked as everybody else was. But he's a Inav Yarza Ishi. Saw the man Horech Barachov, the guest in the middle of the street of the city. Where are you going from? Where are you coming? Right? You don't want to go any further, right? The fact is, he was afraid these people might also have come to settle in the city. He wanted to warn them how wicked the people were here and tell them, just go on. You don't want to be here. Either way, we're going from Beis Lachem Yehuda all the way to the hills of Ephraim. That's where I'm from. I went to Beis Lachem Yehuda. Right? And just know, like, I'm going to the house of Hashem. In other words, don't think that I'm worshipping over the Zara. You know, I worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a party. I want to go to the Mishkan. But nobody wants to invite me over. It's like I'm an Ovid of Avodah Zarah, but I've never done anything wrong. Listen, we have food for my donkeys. I have bread, I have wine. We're not missing anything. We're not lacking anything. We're not traveling. We're not trying to find anywhere to go. We have everything we need. We just need a place to sleep, and that's that. The man said, listen, peace be unto you. Don't worry about anything. All your needs are mine, right? But don't sleep in the streets tonight, okay? So you don't have to worry. I can do Akhna Zorcha. I just come. Let's go quickly. You don't want to remain in the street. He brought him into his house. He gave food to the donkeys, and he washed their feet. And they drank him meticulously. They were drinking. The people of the city, the evil people, they surrounded the house and knocked on the door. Bring out the man so that we should know him. Very, very similar to the whole story of what's going on with Lot, right? What happened with Lot over there. These guys were drunk by now, so they had completely forgotten like what was going on in the first place. They wanted to be over on Arias with this guy, right? It was disgusting and everything like that, but it didn't matter. Everybody was shocked. But my brothers, come on, don't do anything that this evil, right? This man has come to my house. Don't do this evil abomination. That's disgusting. Number one, don't lower yourselves to this practice. Number two, he came to my house because I invited him over. I'm not going to let this happen. Don't disgrace by doing this. Listen, I have a virgin daughter. We have a Pilegish over here, right? A concubine. I'll bring out them, the Anu Osam, if you want to afflict them. At least it's forbidden, but it's a minor sin in comparison to sleeping with this guy. If you guys are so into Arias that much, then sleep with them more than anybody else. At least it won't be considered a shesish, right? It could be that he even understood that his life was in danger at the moment, and he didn't want to endanger it anymore by sending it out. This is crazy. They didn't want to listen. So the man grabbed onto his concubine, and he threw her outside. They knew her. Right? They abused her. They sent her away all in the morning. I'm sorry?
It says your cuff.
Oh, Ka'alos, oh yeah? Ka'alos Shachar. So toward the morning. I guess that they knew. Some say that the old man knew from the start that it was only the concubine that they wanted. They didn't want anybody else. The whole thing was just a trick. The woman came toward the morning. She fell down by the door of the house of the man that her master was staying there until the morning. She just couldn't get up. She was so exhausted, and eventually she died from the exhaustion. He opened up the doors of the house, and he went out to go on his road. It sounds like, even without his concubine, he's willing to leave even without her. The woman, the Pilegish, was fallen by the front of the door. Her hands were right on the lintel. Let's go. Get up. They know that. Nobody answered. He took her on the donkey. He went back. I mean, you see what kind of a disgusting person this was. His concubine was being molested outside. He went to sleep. He didn't even hear when she came back. That person is unbelievably lacking in anything that's over there. It's a disgusting person. He showed no care, no compassion whatsoever when he saw her lying by the doorstep. Just get up and let's go. That's that. She didn't even realize it was dead. Just put her on the donkey and that's that. it's absolutely disgusting. It could be that that's why the father didn't want his daughter to go. He understood that the daughter had to go back because of the rumors flying around. But the fact is, this guy was disgusting. He beat her up beforehand. He's obviously a mean guy. And maybe that's the reason why she originally had left him. I mean, maybe that's... We'll see, either way. We don't know anything about the girl. To stop right here, we'll end with one crazy little thing over here before we end off the parrot. We'll end the parrot with something. But this is for next time. I'll just say that there is a Seder Adoros, Sefer Seder Adoros brings down that the woman, the man, and the rapists come back in Gilgulim. There's a famous story in Kiddushin that Kof Tes that brings down that Abaye had a demon, a seven-headed demon dragon sort of thing. That was seven heads. I mean, it was a crazy little thing that was damaging the students of the yeshiva. And he didn't know what to do with it. Rav Acha bar Yaakov was going to come by. Rav Acha bar Yaakov, he said, oh, he does miracles. He'll be able to save us from this, whatever it was. The demon was the woman who came back as a demon because of everything that had happened to her. Maybe she did do something wrong. The students were the people of the city that had raped her the first time. And the man was Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Came back as Rav Acha bar Yaakov, and he was able to save it, and everything was like that. But that's how the Gilgulim came back. Pretty crazy, isn't it? And that's the whole story. The whole story of trying to save him, whatever it was, is all mentioned over there. We'll start with Chav Tes and Lam, and hopefully we'll be able to finish all of Shoftim and maybe do a little bit of Shmuel Aleph next time.